Hello, it is time to read from the Sioux City Journal for today, Saturday, October 17th, 2020. My name is John Reif, and I'll be reading you the news stories today. Here's a look at what we'll be reading. We'll start with the weather and then the mini editorial. Then we'll go to stories on the front page, followed by stories in the inside pages of local interest at the 20-minute mark. We're going to read the opinion page, any letters to the editor in there. At the 30-minute mark, we'll read the obituaries, followed by sports and more feature stories as time allows, wrapping up with Dear Abby. Starting with the weather for today, looks like partly sunny, breezy in the afternoon, a high of 64 degrees, winds picking up northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, colder, a rain or snow shower possible late tonight, a low down to 30 degrees, and winds north 8 to 16 miles an hour. For Sunday, partly sunny and chilly, a high tomorrow only 43, winds north-northwest at 7 to 14 miles per hour. Sunday night's low of 26 degrees, on Monday chilly with some sun and a high of 47, winds southeast at 6 to 12 miles per hour. Monday night's low of 29, Tuesday some sun, then turning cloudy, a high of 53. 34 for the low on Tuesday night. And on Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies and a high of 54. The Mini today is written by Stephen Farr, F-A-R-R of Sioux City. And Stephen Farr says as follows, "The president and Congress have government-run health care. I don't know of any that opt out or complain about this socialized medicine. Don't you wish you had this kind of health insurance?" Again, that by Stephen Farr of Sioux City. Front page story at the top, justices to weigh census plan. The Supreme Court agreed Friday to take up President Donald Trump's policy, blocked by a lower court, to exclude people living in the U.S. illegally from the census count that will be used to allocate seats into the House of Representatives. Never in U.S. history have immigrants been excluded from the population count that determines how House seats, and by extension, electoral college votes, are divided among the states, a three-judge federal count said in September when it held Trump's policy illegal. The justices put the case on a fast track, setting arguments for November 30th. A decision is expected by the end of the year or early in January, when Trump has to report census numbers to the House. Trump's high court nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, could take part in the case if, as seems likely, she is confirmed by then. Last year, the court, by a 5-4 vote, barred Trump from adding a census question asking people about their citizenship. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died last month, was part of that slim majority. Barrett would take Ginsburg's seat. President Trump has repeatedly tried and failed to weaponize the census for his attacks on immigrant communities. The Supreme Court rejected his attempt last year and should do so again, said American Civil Liberties Union lawyer Dale Ho, representing a coalition of immigrant advocacy groups that challenged Trump's plan in court. Trump left it to Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who oversees the Census Bureau, to figure out how many immigrants are not living legally in each state. The outcome of the census case could affect the distribution of political power for the next 10 years. The census also helps determine the distribution of $1.5 trillion in federal funding annually. The administration told the court that the president retains, quoting here, discretion to exclude illegal aliens from apportionment based on their immigration status, end quote. Trump's violation of federal law is, again quoting here, not particularly close or complicated, the ACLU said in a court filing, arguing that the court shouldn't hear the case. The Supreme Court separately allowed the administration to end the actual census count this week, blocking a court order that would have kept the count going until the end of the month. The court did not take action on two other administration appeals of controversial policies on asylum seekers and the border wall that also were ruled illegal by lower courts. Since early last year, the administration has made asylum seekers wait in Mexico for U.S. court hearings, which has forced tens of thousands of people to return to Mexico. Known informally as Remain in Mexico, the policy became a key pillar of the administration's response to a surge of asylum-seeking families from Central America at the southern border. It also drew criticism for having people wait in dangerous cities. The administration also is appealing a ruling that the administration can't spend more than Congress authorized for border security. After Congress refused to give Trump all the money he wanted for the wall, he declared a national emergency at the border, and Defense Department officials transferred billions of dollars to the project. Lower courts sided with states and environmental groups that challenged the transfer as a violation of the Constitution's provision giving Congress the power to determine spending. A separate suit from members of Congress also is making its way to the court. The justices blocked the court rulings in both the asylum seekers and border wall cases, leaving the policies in effect. Arguments wouldn't be heard before next year, and the issues would have much less significance if Joe Biden were to become president. He could rescind Trump's policy forcing asylum seekers to wait in Mexico, for example. Back to the front page in the center with the large picture, Bishop Heelan High School student remembered, Rehrig had a big heart, loved neon green, this by Earl Horlick in Dateline Sioux City. With a penchant for bow ties and trademark neon green eyeglasses, Isaac Rehrig was someone who was hard to forget. But according to friend Maddie Luer, it was his kindness and willingness to help others that made Rehrig so memorable. Nobody had a bad word to say about Isaac, she said. He was one of the nicest people I have ever met. A 2020 Bishop Heelan Catholic High School graduate, Rehrig died October 9th after being struck by a semi-truck in Cedar Falls, Iowa. The 19-year-old was a freshman at the University of Northern Iowa at the time of his death. Isaac wanted to teach show choir after college, Luer said. He would have been a perfect show choir director, Sarah Buehler said, nodding her head. Both Luer and Buehler met Rehrig when all three were freshmen at Heelan. The three members of Heelan's 2020 graduate class remained friends at UNI as education students. Anna Plath, a 2019 Heelan graduate and sophomore UNI communication student, was also friends with Rehrig. Isaac loved music, Plath said. He was passionate about it. Indeed, Rehrig was involved with music throughout his 4 years at Heelan. He was chosen an all-state vocal music singer, performed in the chorale music group and Harmonia Mundi show choir, was a drummer in the jazz band and a percussionist in the Heelan's marching band. Isaac could teach himself to play any percussion instrument he set his mind to play, Luer said. He could play a trap set in the marching band, Buehler interjected, but he could also play the triangular cymbals, which isn't as easy as you think. Buehler said that that is because Rehrig had an extraordinary concentration. You could always tell Isaac was in concentration mode because he'd get a serious look on his face and his tongue would stick out of his mouth, she said, while giving a good impression of Rehrig's thoughtful side and his concentration face. Plath remembered Rehrig's thoughtful side. When he became the drum major in his senior year, Isaac personally wrote cards to each member of the marching band, she recalled. That was how considerate he was. This was pretty typical for Rehrig, according to Buehler. Isaac was always thinking of others, she explained. He'd do anything for anybody. Rehrig was the son of Todd and Susan Rehrig, brother of Noah, and currently a South Dakota State University student, and Grace, a modern-day school seventh grader. A longtime modern-day teacher, Todd Rehrig became a teacher and cross-country coach at Heelan earlier this year. Please keep the entire Rehrig family in your prayers, as well as our Bishop Heelan community, Heelan President John Flannery said. An outdoor memorial service for Rehrig will be held at 1 p.m. Sunday at Heelan's Memorial Stadium, 100 West 17th Street. Reverend Shane Demon, Heelan's chaplain, will lead the service, and several of Rehrig's former teachers and classmates are expected to speak. The public is invited to attend. Everyone must wear face masks and bring their own chairs. Hundreds of T-shirts bearing images of bow ties and neon green glasses have been ordered to raise funds for a scholarship in Rehrig's name. Rehrig is the second member of Heelan's 2020 graduating class to have died in traffic accidents. Keaton Chiquin, 19, was killed in a hit-and-run accident in Tampa, Florida on June 25th. It was in times like these when Isaac really shined, Buehler said. He'd be the first person to start fundraising for a cause or reach out to a family during a terrible time. That was just the type of person Isaac was, Lira added. He was larger than life and had a big heart. Plus, he loved his Mountain Dew, Plath noted with a smile, and nobody loved neon green like Isaac, Bimler said. Isaac was a goofy dude, Lira said. He was also a sweet guy who loved his family, his friends, and his faith. That's how I'll remember him. Shows an inset picture on page A8 of Sarah Buehler left, Maddie Luer, and Anna Plath sitting in the band section of the bleachers Friday at Bishop Heelan Memorial Field, remembering Isaac Rarig in Sioux City. Rarig, a drum major and 2020 graduate of Bishop Heelan High School, was killed in a traffic accident on October 9th of this year. If you go to the memorial service, it'll be for 2020 Bishop Heelan Catholic School graduate Isaac Rarig. Neon green glasses, a favorite of Rarig, will be distributed for a free will donation toward the scholarship. That'll be 1 p.m. Sunday at Heelan Memorial Stadium at 100 West 17th Street in Sioux City. Special requirements: the public is welcome to attend, but they must bring chairs and facial coverings will be required. Also on the front page is another picture of Sarah Buehler, Maddie Luer, and Anna Plath sitting in the band section of the bleachers Friday at Bishop Heelan Memorial Field, remembering Isaac Rarig in Sioux City. Back to the front page, more COVID-19 reported in schools. No additional classrooms must move online. This by Brett Hayworth and Dateline Sioux City. The Sioux City School District continues to be impacted by community spread of the novel coronavirus, but this week no class sections and enough virus cases to necessitate moving from in-person instruction to online learning. The district is continuing the Friday practice of releasing the number of positive cases determined within the district over each week. The newest recap of positive cases showed 9 employees and 3 pupils tested positive, and the trend over nearly 2 months has shown that more employees than students are being impacted by the virus. Over the weeks from the second week of September through the first week of October, at least one class section, primarily in elementary schools, had moved online. Combined, more than a dozen class sections have moved online in the 2020-2021 school year. Cases have climbed sharply the last 5 weeks in Woodbury County. As of mid-afternoon Friday, the number of positive cases in the county stood above 6,600. 3 more deaths from COVID-19 in Woodbury County were reported Friday, taking the total up to 85 county residents dying. The release noted that for each positive case reported, contact tracing is done in conjunction with Siouxland District Health Department. Individuals who test positive, as well as any individuals identified as close contacts, are directed to self-isolate or self-quarantine and take other appropriate measures in accordance with state and public health guidance. District workers continue taking steps such as extensive cleaning and sanitizing places that are heavily used in buildings. The end of the first quarter of the year comes on October 28th. The district on Friday has informed parents that students who want to change their format of learning, either from online to in school or vice versa, are approaching a deadline to do so. Those requests, which can be done online, must be placed by October 22nd, and a decision will be returned by October 26. When we allowed families to select virtual learning at the start of this year, we requested students to stay enrolled in this learning format for at least the first quarter. So with the start of the next quarter fast approaching, parents and guardians can now submit a request if they would like to change a student's current learning model, the district message says. The 15% mark in the 14-day average of positive coronavirus tests was established by the Iowa Department of Education as the point in which school districts can ask to move entire school buildings from in-person to online learning. The Woodbury County ratio has routinely been above 15% for much of the last 3 weeks, and it was 15.5% on Friday. On Monday, Sioux City School Board member Monique Scarlett, for the second consecutive board meeting, pushed for a change to hybrid learning. She contends students are at risk as COVID-19 continues to spread. On October 2nd, the district reported that 16 employees and 10 pupils had tested positive. For the week ending September 25th, 17 workers tested positive, as did 15 students, while 4 students and 4 employees tested positive for the week ended September 18th, and 5 pupils and 7 staffers tested positive in the second week through September 11th. The last story on the front page, Dort officials praise DeVos. Secretary of Education paid visit to Sioux Center Friday. This by Mason Doctor and Dateline Sioux Center, Iowa. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos was praised for the administration's supportive attitude toward Christian values by Dort University officials Friday during a visit to the university's technical training facility. DeVos toured Dort's Agriculture Stewardship Center, which provides tech school-style training called ProTech to students after a visit earlier in the day to the Vermeer Corporation in Pella, Iowa. Dort is in the heart of conservative Sioux County, where Trump campaign signs and flags are a frequent roadside sight. During a roundtable discussion with the secretary, university officials, and area business leaders, Dort President Eric Hoekstra said Donald Trump's administration has been a friend to institutions like Dort because of its affirmation of technical training and apprenticeships, its deregulatory stance, and its positive attitude toward Christian ideals. For 4 years, I fought the federal government about religious issues, Hoekstra said, referring to the Obama years. In the last 4 years, I've felt like you could hear us, and I just want to say thank you for that. I want to echo what President Hoekstra said, thanking you in relation to religious control for schools. You know, we've tried to get there through courts and legislation, and we see the power of regulation, and we thank you for that, added Leah Zudema, Dort's VP of Academic Affairs. DeVos said the administration has made a point of not rankling the faithful. This has been a high priority of the whole administration, is to essentially reassert the First Amendment, that we all have the freedom to practice our faith, said DeVos, one of the few Trump cabinet officials who remains from his first year in office. For many, if not all of us in this room, our faith infuses everything we do. You don't separate it. It's not like you put it in a box over here and then go do something else. And so it was really important that we look at a lot of the regulation that has been done previously and strip away the things that have precluded the ability to freely practice your faith, she added. Hoekstra said later that she was referring to a lawsuit the school filed several years ago, though he never specified which lawsuit. It appears he was referencing a controversy that began back in 2012 when Dort, then called Dort College, was one of 149 Christian colleges, universities, churches, and religious groups that objected to the federal government's mandate to provide contraception to employees under the Affordable Care Act. A federal judge in 2014 ruled that Dort did not have to comply with the contraception mandate. The following year, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the Affordable Care Act placed an unjust burden on religiously affiliated employers by forcing them to provide coverage for contraceptives even when they could opt out of directly paying for them. Dort, which is not formally owned by any church, sought in its 2013 lawsuit to be recognized as a religious institution under federal law. This designation would have exempted them from legal provisions that go against their religious beliefs. Dort had to file a lawsuit to assert our ability to be a religious institution. We were eventually successful in that lawsuit. We haven't had to do that the last 4 years because of the understanding of what religion means in America with Secretary DeVos as our Secretary of Education, Hoekstra said. It just made it easier, and I sleep better at night. On the front page in the inset picture, it shows Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos standing with Dort University President Eric Hoekstra during a visit to the school's Agricultural Stewardship Center Friday afternoon. Moving now to page A2 at the top, Shulton tops Feenstra in fundraising. Dateline Sioux City by Brett Hayworth. J.D. Shulton, the Democratic nominee for the Iowa 4th Congressional District race, continued a strong fundraising streak by bringing in more than $800,000 in campaign contributions over the last 3 months. Shulton's third quarter haul was nearly double what his Republican opponent, State Senator Randy Feenstra, brought in during the same period. For the 2020 campaign cycle, Shulton, who narrowly lost to Representative Steve King in 2018, has raised nearly $2.5 million. In totals from fundraising reports filed late Thursday, Shulton took in $815,662 for the third quarter, according to the report his campaign filed with the Federal Election Commission late Thursday. Randy Feenstra brought in $456,869 for the three-month period ended September 30th. Over the two-year cycle, Shulton has now raised a combined of $2.47 million. Feenstra's total is $1.7 million. The 4th District, which covers 39 counties in northwest and north-central Iowa, is by far the most Republican of the state's four congressional districts. The amount Shulton raised from July through September is a new record for any Democrat during any quarter over the last 10 years in the district. At the end of the quarter, after paying expenses, Shulton had $638,964 in cash on hand to spend, while Feenstra had $275,489 in cash. Shulton's team referenced that because of the large number of donors, the average contribution was $5. Our grassroots people-powered campaign doesn't take a dime from corporations or the DCCC, and we've earned donations from folks across the political spectrum in all 39 counties of the district. Meanwhile, Randy Feenstra has accepted hundreds of thousands of dollars from the very corporations that threaten our livelihoods, Shulton said in a release. Up through July 30th, Shulton had outperformed Feenstra over the campaign cycle, bringing in $1.65 million, while Feenstra had $1.25 million in contributions. The momentum is squarely with Randy. Iowans know Randy can deliver results for our families, farmers, and Main Streets. We are proud that more than 2,900 Iowans have invested in our campaign, fueling our largest quarter of the campaign to date, said Feenstra campaign manager Matt Leopold. Leopold also cited an internal poll from Feenstra that showed he had a 23 percentage point lead. According to that poll by American Viewpoint, conducted for Feenstra's team, Feenstra leads Shulton 54% to 31%, with 11% undecided. Shulton on Thursday criticized that poll as a push poll and said his internal polls show a much more competitive race. Leopold said Shulton is, quoting here, lighting liberal money from California and New York on fire while pushing a radical agenda of higher taxes. Shulton pointed to Feenstra receiving $50,000 from the 20 for 20 Victory Fund, a joint fundraising committee set by U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, Republican from Texas. Shulton noted Cruz had worked against the renewable fuel standard being sufficiently supportive of corn-based ethanol, with many waivers given to oil companies. Our campaign is fighting for the very people who make this district work, the farmers, folks in the renewable fuels industry, teachers, nurses, and truck drivers. We will always show up and fight for them, not corporations and the 1% top earners, Shulton said. In the prior fundraising quarter that ended July 30th, Shulton raised $619,849 for the second quarter of the fundraising year. The Republican nominee Randy Feenstra brought in $403,817 over that same time. King, who's been in the House for 18 years, sought re-election but lost to Feenstra in the June primary by a margin of almost 10 percentage points. Four other Republicans also sought the nomination, while Shulton was unopposed in the Democratic primary. It's time now to read from the opinion page, and on there is Other Voices, today's letter from the Lincoln Journal Star. It's titled CARES Act Broadband Big Boost to Rural Nebraska. COVID-19 forced much of how we live day in and day out, whether it's working, communicating, or learning, online at rapid speed earlier this year. One of the unintended consequences of this shift was the exposure of the digital divide in Nebraska, which is felt most acutely in the state's rural areas. However, an expedited investment of federal pandemic relief money will help to close that gap. As we wrote early in this pandemic, Governor Ricketts planned to use $29.5 million in CARES Act funds to expand broadband access was laudable. In May, the governor told the Journal Star editorial board he'd have used even more of the money allotted to the state if he thought it could have been done before the deadline set by Congress. We said then that this focus was wise. Now that the specifics of Ricketts' plan are in hand, it's worth appreciating the size of this sorely needed effort. Consider the scope of three elements within this package: the number of homes connected to broadband, the locations served, and the speed of the forthcoming service. The governor said a minimum of 17,600 housing units will have access to this high-speed internet by the end of 2020. If that smallest figure is indeed met, it represents more than 2% of all homes in the entire state, according to the 2019 American Community Survey. While the number may seem small, recall that roughly two-thirds of Nebraskans live in one of the state's three designated metropolitan areas: Lincoln, Omaha, and Grand Island. Much of the remainder lives in micropolitan areas with anchor cities of more than 10,000 residents, where high-speed internet access tends to be readily accessible. For those who live outside our 12 metropolitan counties and 9 micropolitan counties, though, such connectivity is far from guaranteed, nor is it in rural areas adjacent to these larger communities. That's why such significant investment, involving 20 companies performing 60 projects in 38 of Nebraska's 93 counties, is needed and welcome, bringing a digital lifeline to areas in danger of falling even further behind the times. The Federal Communication Commission standards of 25 megabits per second download and 3 megabits per second upload don't represent world-beating speed, but those will certainly help rural Nebraskans keep pace with the ever-increasing speed of technology. In a day and age where our ongoing pandemic has necessitated high-speed internet to support working and learning from home to ensure safety, the expansion of rural broadband equates to a 21st century version of the rural electrification seen in the 1930s. Nebraska is taking this massive leap forward at a time when its rural citizens need it most. And that's from the Lincoln Journal Star, the other voices on the opinion page. Going back now to page A2, Hopkins challenges Holt in House District 18. This is by Brett Hayworth, Dateline Denison. State Representative Stephen Holt, Republican from Denison, and Democrat Damon Hopkins are vying for the Iowa House District 18 seat. Holt has won 3 2-year terms dating to his first House win in 2014. District 18 covers all of Shelby County and parts of Crawford and Harrison counties. The district has 8,315 active Republican voters compared to 4,497 Democratic voters. Another 5,373 are registered as no party. The election is on November 3rd, and early voting in Iowa began on October 5th. Information about Damon Hopkins: the party is Democratic. He's 25. His residence is Dunlap. His occupation is restaurant employee. His electoral experience: this is his first run for elective office. His main issues for 2020: number one, rural internet access. I'd propose a bill to get rural broadband to give folks in the country equal opportunity to the internet. I'd do something similar to what FDR did with electricity in the last century. Two, restore collective bargaining power. Teachers, being near and dear to my heart, got raked over the coals when it comes to being able to get fair compensation. This has been exacerbated by the pandemic. Why to vote for me? I came of age in the district. I have been formed by the people here from here and know how best to serve them. I'm also young, one of the youngest people running for the state house this cycle. I believe this gives me a unique perspective on building the future of the community I live in. The other side, Stephen Holt. The party is Republican. He is 62 years old. His residence is Denison. His occupation is small business owner. Was police officer for 4 years and 20 years in the U.S. Marine Corps. His electoral experience: has won 3 terms in the Iowa House in 2014, 2016, and 2018. Main issues for 2020: number one, I will introduce legislation to create stronger penalties for rioters who assault law enforcement, loot, or damage public or private property. Two, fiscal responsibility. Why vote for me? I say what I believe, and I go to Des Moines and do what I promise. I am pro-life and pro-Second Amendment. I believe in capitalism and free markets, and I reject socialism absolutely. I will fight for our founding values of faith, hard work, and limited government, because in these values are found positive solutions to the challenges that face us. Next story, still on page A2, Wakanda man sentenced to prison for selling meth. Dateline Sioux Falls. A Wakanda, South Dakota man was sentenced Tuesday to 11 years in prison for selling methamphetamine. Ricky Guide, G-I-E-D-D, 51 years old, pleaded guilty in July in U.S. District Court in Sioux Falls to conspiracy to distribute a controlled substance. From an unknown date until February, Guide and others sold more than 500 grams of meth in South Dakota and elsewhere. He was indicted in March. Okay, it's now time for the obituary, starting with Sioux City. Spyridon Christos Kritis, that's S-P-Y-R-I-D-O-N Christos K-R-I-T-I-S of Sioux City, 85 years old, died Wednesday, October 14th. Service will be October 19th, 7 p.m. Arrangements are being handled by Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Visitation will be October 19th, 4 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. From Sioux City, LaDonna Ray Case of Sioux City, 85 years old, passed away Wednesday, October 14th. A memorial service will be October 20th, 1 p.m. at Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Burial will be at Grace Hill Cemetery in Haywarden. From Wayne, Nebraska, Jonah Stevens Sr., 75 years old, passed away Wednesday, October 14th. Private services with military rites will be held. Burial will be at Greenwood Cemetery in Wayne. Arrangements are being handled by Haseman Funeral Home of Wayne. From Dakota Dunes, Thelma Dell Liston, 90 years old. Thelma Liston passed away Monday, October 12th. Service will be October 17th, 11 a.m. Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City is handling the arrangements. Visitation will be October 17th, 10 a.m. at the funeral home. From Norfolk, Nebraska, formerly Anthony, Iowa, Scott L. Mastney, that's M-A-S-T-N-Y, Scott L. Mastney, 63, of Norfolk, formerly of Anthony, died Saturday, October 3rd, at St. Joseph's Rehabilitation and Care Center in Norfolk. Memorial services will also be at 10 a.m. Wednesday at the Church of Christ in Anthony. Memorial services 10 a.m. Thursday at Stonacheck Funeral Chapel in Norfolk as well. Interment will be on Prospect Hill Cemetery. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service Thursday at the funeral home. Condolences may be expressed to the family online at Stonacheck, that's S-T-O-N-A-C-E-K, funeralchapel.com. Scott Lewis Mastney was born on September 9th, 1957, to Al and Betty Stroh Mastney in Omaha. The family moved to Norfolk in 1967 from Council Bluffs, Iowa, where his parents had a meat business. He graduated from Norfolk High School in 1976. He was employed at Lynn and Al's grocery stores in Norfolk and owned Groucho's Records and Tapes with his brother Tim. He then went to work for Lever Brothers Corporation as a salesman. He was also employed by Affiliated Foods until he opened his own grocery store, Corner Market, in Anthony. He owned and operated several businesses in Iowa, including a convenience store in Anthony. He also owned and operated the Valley Drive Inn and Driftwood Pizza in Correctionville. He traveled to Europe on vacations to visit friends and family. He also enjoyed cruises. He was integral in bringing Johnny Carson to Norfolk to speak at the class of 1976 Norfolk High School's graduation. When Johnny Carson returned to Norfolk to film his NBC special Johnny Comes Home, Scott had the opportunity to be Mr. Carson's personal driver. He was very generous and outgoing. He enjoyed providing concert tickets and meals for his friends and family. He loved to go to movies with family and friends. He enjoyed spending time with his niece and nephews and their families when he could. Next, from Sioux City, Twyla C. Weaver, 96 years old. Twyla Weaver died Wednesday, October 14th. The service will be October 19th, 10 a.m. at Whitfield United Methodist Church. Burial will be at Logan Park Cemetery. Visitation will be October 18th from 4 to 6 p.m. and arrangements are being handled by Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. From Sioux City, Dr. Imogene Desmet, that's D-E-S-M-E-T. Dr. Imogene Desmet of Sioux City, 92 years old, passed away Sunday, October 11th. Service will be October 19th, 10:30 a.m., St. Isidore Catholic Church in Colombe, South Dakota. Burial will be at Dallas Catholic Cemetery. Arrangements are being handled there by Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. And the final one for the day from Sioux City, Marcia K. McGraw, M-C-G-R-A-W. Marcia McGraw of Sioux City, 66 years old, died Thursday, October 8th. Visitation will be October 20th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Armstrong Van Houten Funeral Home in Anthon. Going back to page A2, South Sioux City's Attacad to host live horse racing event this weekend. This is by Journal staff, Dateline South Sioux City. For the fifth consecutive year, Ho-Chunk Inc. will host live horse racing at the racetrack at Attacad in South Sioux City this weekend. The sanctioned races will be held Saturday and Sunday. Post times for races each day will be at 2 p.m. Due to COVID-19, there will not be any amenities as in past years. Those who wish to wager and watch the race, masks and social distancing are required. There will be goodie bags available on a first-come, first-serve basis. We want to thank the loyal fans for their support over the years, said Lance Morgan, CEO of Ho-Chunk Inc., which owns and operates the track. We will be back to normal racing events in 2021. Ho-Chunk Inc., along with the Nebraska HBPA, are the sponsors behind Keep the Money in Nebraska's three ballot initiatives before Nebraska voters this election. Initiative 429 legalizes casino gaming at Attacad and other licensed horse tracks in Nebraska. Initiative 430 regulates casinos, and Initiative 431 provides a tax structure. Moving now to Section C in the sports section, O-line comes together, Mustangs red zone defense stepping up too. This by Zach James at Dateline Sioux City. Before the season started, Morningside College football coach Steve Ryan knew one group had to try to get in sync while being competitive at the same time. The offensive line has done just that throughout the fall camp and the first three games for the Mustangs. The Mustangs' O-line will attempt to continue bolstering the offense when they travel to Jamestown, North Dakota at 1 p.m. Saturday to face the Jimmies. It'll be the Jimmies' first home game of the season as they played both their games at Concordia and Dort. When fall camp started, Ryan knew that the O-line was going to look different. He knew that there were going to be five new guys up front, and all of them reported to camp with the shot to be starters. While there was competition to win a job, that group also had to learn how to play together as one collective group. They needed to play together. I think they've done a fantastic job of that, Ryan said. They've gotten on the same page together and learned about each other. Once you get into the season, it's just constantly communicating and getting to know each other better. Ryan pointed out that the offensive line is still learning about each other, and it will be a continuing process throughout the season. That's the way it works, Ryan said. There's just something that you have to make a decision to get to know each other and continue to get to know each other, and that's what they're doing. That offensive line, consisting of Tyler Anderson, Hunter Behrens, Jason Simcoe, Jake Noel, and Mason Williams, hasn't given up a single sack in the three games played. On top of that, Morningside's offense goes into Saturday's game ranking second nationally in passing yards per game at 360.3 and points with 51.7 points per game. The Mustangs rank fifth in total offense, 522.3, and total pass offense at 1,081 yards. Arna J. A.P. Ponder scored four rushing touchdowns last week as he broke the program's career touchdown record also last week. For the running back, it's about getting a feel of where the hole is going to be, and for quarterback Joe Dolinchek, the offensive line needs to know where to expect him, and that makes it easier to pass protect for him. Ryan likes the development shown on defense, too. The Mustangs have created several turnovers and have turned them into points. Last week, the Mustangs forced Briar Cliff, which has a bye week this week, to throw five interceptions for 159 yards. Jamal Jones had the longest interception in that 66-3 win with an 85-yard interception return. Drew Bessie, Seth Maitland, Dane Davis, and Weston Schultz each had interceptions off BCU quarterbacks John Bell and Caden Mitchell. On the season, the Mustangs have nine interceptions and five forced fumbles. The Mustangs' defense has stepped up when its back was against the wall in the red zone. Briar Cliff had the chance to score in its red zone early in the second quarter last week, but the Mustangs' defense turned the Chargers away with a 39-yard field goal. In their win against Midland, the Warriors had three chances to score in their red zone, but Morningside gave up just one touchdown out of those three chances. The other two drives ended in a turnover on downs and an interception. Morningside has even turned Northwestern away from the end zone a couple of times in the second half during the Mustangs' 45-31 victory in the opening week of the season. The Red Raiders' second drive in the second half got down to the Morningside 1 yard line, but the Red Raiders opted for a field goal on that drive. Northwestern started off the fourth quarter by getting as close to the Mustangs' 18, and the Red Raiders again took a field goal. The Red Raiders' last three drives got within the Morningside 30, but the Mustangs' defense refused Northwestern to get back in the red zone. "They've been able to toughen up in the red zone," Ryan said. "That's a true testament to that defense. I think it's been really good. They made stops when they needed to make stops. It's something we talk about all the time. A lot of that is refusing to quit and continuing to play hard as long as you're on the field, and that's a great quality." It shows an inset picture on page C4, Briarcliff's Emmanuel Mitchell brought down by Morningside's Jackson Perrion and Joshua Miller during Morningside College versus Briarcliff University football action on Saturday, October 10th at Elwin Olsen Stadium in Sioux City. Moving now to page C2, South Sioux City boys compete at Stateline Omaha. South Sioux had an entry in all four divisions at the Class B NSAA State Boys Tennis Tournament on Thursday. The Cardinals finished with 4 points at the state tournament. Sophomore Aiden DeBurr won his first-round match in Class B number one singles as he defeated Scotts Bluff's Barrett Frank. DeBurr won the first set 6-3, lost in the second set 8-6, and then bounced back with a 10-5 win in the third set. DeBurr lost to Mount Michael Benedictine's Isaac Gart, the number one seed, 6-0 and 6-0 in the next round. Gart went on to win the state title. South Sioux junior Nathan Feenstra lost to Lexington's Grayson Strauss 6-0-6-1 at number two singles. At number one doubles, junior Jessa Hanna and senior Juan Carlos Perdomo lost their first round match to a duel from Nebraska City 6-2-6-2. South Sioux's pairing of Isaac Colker and Dale Colker, both sophomores, lost to a pair from Kearney Catholic 6-1 and 6-0. Next story is Tanagers DV get to state. This Dateline Lenox, South Dakota. The Vermilion High School boys cross country team won the Region 3A cross country meet on Thursday. The Tanagers scored 35 points to take the regional championship. Lenox was second with 45 points, and Dakota Valley also qualified as a team with 51 points. Tanager's senior Riley Ruhak won the individual championship by running the 5,000-meter course in 16 minutes, 46 seconds. Beresford freshman Andrew Atwood finished in third place at 17:17. Elk Point Jefferson freshman Joe Cross was fourth with 17:20, and Panthers junior Blake Schmidt was fifth at 17:23. There were two other Panther runners who finished in the top 20. Junior Reed Donaldson was 11th with 17:45, and sophomore Alex Olson was 16th at 18:04. The other three runners who will join DV's cross-country team are Avery Bradshaw, Alex Messersmith, and Keaton Wright. Vermilion had three other runners finishing in the top 15. Freshman Joel Daloff was 7th with 17:29. Sophomore Emery Bonsack was 14th at 17:55, and sophomore Jack Freeberg was 15th place at 17:59. In the girls' 3A race, the three teams moving on were Lenox, T Area, and Beresford. Tanager's freshman Taylor Barda was second overall in 19:33, 4 seconds behind region champion Emily Plucker of Lenox. Canton freshman Corinne Braun was third at 19:56. The Watchdogs had four runners in the top 20. They were led by junior Anna Atwood, who was 7th at 20:33. Senior Laura Bogue wasn't far behind, as she was 8th at 20:37. 7th grader Harley Cott was 15th overall, and her time was 21:18. Beresford's 7th grader Ella Meerman was 19th at 21:34. EPJ's top runner was sophomore Heather Stark, who finished 21st with a time of 22:01. Claire of Kilcullen led Dakota Valley with a 36th place time of 23 minutes 11 seconds. Metros beat Carroll by 2. The Sioux City Metro girls swimming team was in a tight duel with Carroll, but the Metros won by 4 points, defeating Carroll at 86-84. The Metro's first win came in the 200-yard freestyle as Hope Verk won in 158.27, and the Metro's went 1-2 as Caitlin Shaputis, was second in 2 minutes 10 seconds, .21, a second faster than her seed time. Avery Koopmans followed with a win in the 200-yard IM in 227.56. Chaputis later added a win in the 100-yard butterfly. She touched the wall in 1 minute 5 seconds, .06, more than a second faster than her seed time. Gurk followed with her second win, this time in the 100-yard freestyle, as she won in 53.26 seconds, 5 seconds faster than second place. Brecken Baller then won the 500-yard freestyle, 5 minutes, 39.52 seconds. Doing a rundown of high school volleyball, Nuo Fonda swept both of its matches at the Sioux Central Triangular on Thursday. Sioux Central went 0-2. Nuo Fonda is now 25-3 on the season, and the Mustangs have won 11 straight matches. Sioux Central is 5-12. South Central Calhoun is 13-20 on the year. Nuo Fonda swept South Central Calhoun 25-11, 25-22, 25-20, and the Mustangs swept Sioux Central 25-13, 25-9, 25-10. In the loss, Sioux Central's Berkeley Johansson had 15 assists and Taylor Krager had 11 digs. Sioux Central won the first game 25-16 against South Central's Calhoun, but the Titans went on to win the match 16-25, 25-15, 28-26, and 25-17. Johansson had 26 assists and Krager had 10 digs and 5 aces. Emma Lawning had 17 digs and Dayla Brugman had 3 aces. Jenna Jessen had 7 kills and Hallie Lorson had 6 kills. Galen Catholic downed Harris Lake Park 3-0. Galen Catholic won its 16th straight match as the Jays swept Harris Lake Park 25-15, 25-11, 25-10 on Thursday. MOC Floyd Valley downed Rock Valley 3-0. Jaslyn DeHaan got her 1,000th career dig as MOC Floyd Valley swept Rock Valley 25-6, 25-17, 25-18 on Thursday. Sioux Center downed Sheldon 3-0. Reagan Johnson had 20 kills to lead the Warriors to a 27-25, 25-21, 25-21 win over the Orabs in Siouxland conference match in Sioux Center Thursday. Boyden Hole over Okoboji 3-0. Boyden Hole dominated in a 25-12, 25-9, 25-13 sweep of Okoboji on Thursday. Boyden Hole is 21-7 on the year. Okoboji is 11-18. Cherokee downed Storm Lake 3-0. After losing to Western Christian, Cherokee bounced back with a 25-22, 25-17, 25-9 sweep of Storm Lake on Thursday. Woodbury Central over River Valley 3-2. Woodbury Central fell behind 0-2, but the Wildcats bounced back and beat River Valley 21-25, 24-26, 25-20, 25-20, 15-9 on Thursday. Woodbury Central's 10-14 on the season. River Valley falls to 6-17. Remsen St. Mary's downs MMCRU 3-2. MMCRU forced a fifth set, but Remsen St. Mary's held on. They won 25-21, 22-25, 26-24, 14-25, and 15-9 on Thursday. Akron Westfield over Hartley Melvin Sanborn 3-0. Akron Westfield didn't allow 20 points in any set. They won 25-19, 25-14, 25-15 in a sweep of HMS on Thursday. Ridgeview over Siouxland Christian 3-0. It was a tight three sets, but Ridgeview got the sweep over Siouxland Christian 26-24, 26-24, and 25-21 on Thursday. Central Lion over Sibley Ocheyedan 3-0. Dion Jansman had 9 kills to lead the Lions to a 25-14, 25-12, 25-11 Siouxland Conference volleyball win in Sibley on Thursday. West Lion over George Little Rock 3-0. West Lion swept George Little Rock 25-10, 25-21, 25-19 on Thursday. West Lion is 12-9 on the season. GLR falls to 3-15. Elk Point Jefferson downs Irene Wakanda 3-1. Josie Curry had 12 kills and Addie Stabe 17 assists to lead the Huskies to win 25-14, 18-25, 25-22, and 25-17 in a match played in Elk Point on Thursday. Trinity Christian over West Sioux 3-2. Trinity Christian needed 5 sets to beat West Sioux 25-19, 12-25, 25-20, 20-25, and 15-12 on Thursday. Trinity Christian won its 4th straight match and is 8-11. West Sioux falls to 2-14. Last one for the day on the volleyball. East Sac downs Alta Aurelia 3-0. Alta Aurelia was swept 25-18, 25-13, 25-14 by East Sac. Alta Aurelia falls to 15-4. East Sac is at 21-0. All right, it's time to do Dear Abby. Today's first letter is from Hates the Smoke in Oregon. It's titled Late Night Smoking Clouds Neighbors' Sweet Dreams. Dear Abby, my family and I bought a house in a nice, quiet, safe neighborhood 3 years ago. What we didn't know prior to moving in was that our next door neighbor sometimes smokes cigarettes. It rains 8 months out of the year here, and we usually keep our windows closed, so it isn't an issue. But during the summer, we like to sleep with the windows open. When our neighbor steps outside for a cigarette, the smoke drifts into our bedroom. Our homes are separated by small yards, so at first I thought they didn't realize that the smoke was bothering us. Eventually, I began to get upset. When I wake up in the middle of the night to use the bathroom, I can smell it. I have made a point of loudly slamming the window shut, hoping it would make them stop. There is no way they don't hear the noise, but it doesn't stop them. We don't want to have to keep our windows closed because it is not an everyday occurrence. It happens once a week or so, and always late at night or early in the morning. I don't know if this is how they handle insomnia or what the deal is. Why do they still smoke in this day and age? There's no landlord to complain to because they own their home. After all these years, we have never introduced ourselves to each other, and I don't believe they care to know us any more than we care to get to know them. Because of this, confronting them is not an option. What do we do? Signs, Hates the Smoke in Oregon. Dear Hates, your letter illustrates the disadvantages of isolationism. Had you made a point of introducing yourself when you or they moved in, you probably wouldn't have needed to write to me now. Slamming your window shut is not a friendly or efficient way to communicate because these people are not mind readers. Going next door, introducing yourself, politely explaining that there's a problem, and asking if they could smoke on the other side of their house, away from your bedroom window, would be better. If you can't bring yourself to do that, write a letter, keeping the communication civil, and tell them in simple language that you would appreciate their cooperation in solving this problem. One more letter today from Don't Show Me in Missouri. Dear Abby, I've been with the same man for 22 years, married for 16. We live in a small town. During the last 4 or 5 years, everything has become about politics for my husband. I have absolutely no interest in hearing about what happens politically in big cities or anywhere for that matter. How can I get him to stop going on and on about what he reads or hears? So far, I haven't been successful, and we end up arguing. Must I take an interest in it for his sake? Do you see any room for a compromise? Signed, Don't Show Me in Missouri. Dear Don't, to some degree, you have allowed your husband to vent, or you have to allow your husband to vent. Because we are in an important election year, there is no escaping the subject. If you listen, you may learn something you didn't know that could be relevant to you. Limit the amount of time you spend listening, but I don't recommend cutting him off. I'm willing to bet that you sometimes bring up subjects that may be less than fascinating for him, too. Tolerance and a willingness to compromise are two of the ingredients in a healthy marriage. Okay, one last look at the weather for today. Partly sunny, breezy in the afternoon, a high of 64 for today. Winds northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, colder, a rain or snow shower late tonight, a low of 30 degrees, winds north at 8 to 16. For Sunday, partly sunny and chilly, a high tomorrow of 43. A low Sunday night dipping down to 26. And then on Monday, chilly with some sun, a high of 47 degrees. A low Monday night of 29. On Tuesday, some sun, then turning cloudy, and a high of 53. Tuesday night's low of 34. And for Wednesday, mostly cloudy, and a high of 54 degrees. That does it for reading the Sioux City Journal for today, Saturday, October 17th, 2020. For the last hour, the stories have been selected and read by me, John Reef. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print handicapped. If you have any questions, you can call IRIS toll-free at 877-404-4747. We thank you for listening to IRIS, your radio reading service.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes? Their age? The way they speak? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner? Or a 14-year-old girl who signs up to every after-school activity not to make friends, but just to get something to eat? Or a retiree who fell ill and had to choose
between getting medicine or groceries?
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. People you pass by every day but never knew were hungry. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong, and the Ad Council.